All right. So the way we're doing this series or this study is on Sunday morning we did the book of Genesis, and then on Wednesday night we'll do a story from the book of Genesis. We'll go into more detail than what we do on Sunday when we do the overall overview of a book. So I talked a little bit about this on Sunday already, but I want to go a little bit more in talking about Lot. So open your Bible to Genesis 11, verse 27.
Genesis what?
11:27.
Look at Genesis this last Sunday.
Yep.
11:27.
Yeah.
Did you get
the
message?
Mhm. Yeah, we're doing that through the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did Genesis, and it's like a drinking from a fire hose. This is like so much. You're just trying to get through so much. I try not to rush through it, but at the end I had to rush through because I had to get out there for donuts with dads and. But so that's why on Wednesday nights I want to like be able to spend a little bit more time on something particular from the book.
Again.
Huh?
Briefly touch on it again before you.
Yeah.
Have two one message.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I said I think it went good.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of facts that gets that no more.
No.
Yeah.
Words.
Yeah.
Words in the chapter. That kind of
thing. Yep. The importance of those. All right. So the first time we see Lot's name mentioned is in Genesis chapter 11, verse 27. It says, now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran begat Lot. So so we see that Abram, Nahor, and Haran are brothers. Okay, and then Haran has a boy named Lot. And then Haran dies in the next verse before Terah died. And so if you think about this, Lot was Abram's nephew. Okay, so Abraham was his uncle. And his dad dies, and so Abraham's the oldest boy, and so he kind of, between the grandpa, Terah, and Abram, they kind of take Lot in, and he grows up a little bit with Abram. And so if you look at the, let's see, in verse 31 of that chapter, it says, and Terah, that's the grandpa, took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto... Whoa! They came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. All right, so I want you guys to see, though, that we don't know exactly how old Lot was. In a minute, we'll find out that Abraham was 75. He's the oldest brother. So, you know, I would guess Lot's probably in his mid-20s, something like that, if I had to guess. It could be a little older, it could be a little younger. We don't know exactly how far apart all the boys were on their age or how old they were when they had their kids. But I would guess Lot's probably like in his mid-20s. And but he's living with his father has died, his grandfather has died. And so he's living with his uncle Abram and his wife Sarai, and he kind of gets, not raised because he's probably already an adult at this point, but he kind of grows up in Abram's, household. And so, and if you know anything about Genesis chapter 12, Genesis 12 is where God gives the Abrahamic covenant, and the Abrahamic covenant is God's promise to Abraham that, he's going to give him a land, which is the promised land. He's going to give him a seed that's going to last forever. It's going to multiply like the stars in the sky or the sand on the sea. And so God gives him this Abrahamic covenant in chapter 12, verse 1. This is immediately after his grandpa died. So his dad and his grandpa are gone, and he's with Abram, and Abram gets this covenant from God. And I'm not going to read it all, but God gives him this command and says, Abram, you need to get up out of the land that you're dwelling in, and I want you to go to the promised land. I'm giving you this promised land. I want you to go. And in verse 4, after he hears the three verses of that command from God, it says, so Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife and Lot his brother's son and all their substance that they had gathered and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And so, what I want you guys to get from this, I think, especially for you guys that are here right now, all of you guys are growing up in a church right? You're growing up in a Christian household. You guys have spiritual leaders in your family, right, that can lead you and guide you to follow the Lord. That's what Lot has. Lot has Abram, and Abram at this time has fellowship with the Lord. He's walking with God. God's communicating with Abraham, saying, I want to give you this land. I want to give you a seed. I want to give you all these promises. If somebody blesses you, I'm going to bless them. Just by their proximity to you and how they deal with you, that's going to determine how I'm going to deal with them. And so God is working with Abram, and Lot is seeing all of this. Okay, Lot is seeing what it is like to have a leader in his household who is walking with the Lord, who's communicating with the Lord, and who's obedient to the Lord. The first thing that God tells him right here is to get up and go to the promised land, and it says that Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him. So he's doing exactly what God has commanded him to do. So Lot has a good example set for him by Abram. All of you guys that are in here tonight have a good example with your parents that are being set for you. And now that does not, as parents, that's what we try to do. We try to set an example for our children, because we want to see them follow and go further than where we are. Like, we want to train up our children so that they can, surpass us in what they can accomplish for the Lord. And so Abram's trying to do that here with Lot, but it doesn't always go that way. Like, your parents can't make the choices for you to obey the Lord. They can show you what it's like. They can demonstrate it. They can do it in their own life. They can teach it to you. But ultimately, it's up to you guys to make the decision as to whether or not you're going to do that. And so so he has this great example. And I told you guys on Sunday that Lot is kind of a picture of like a modern-day Christian who's like got one foot in the world and one foot following the Lord, right? And I think that can be us a lot, like especially at your age. It's really easy to like have a draw to what the world has to offer. The world has some things that our flesh wants, and it can be easy to get caught up in those things. And so Lot's a good picture of somebody who struggles to solely focus on the Lord. He has a good example, and he has all the information and the knowledge that he needs, but he doesn't do a very good job of living those things out in his own life. And so if you continue reading in chapter 12, we're going to kind of skip around a little bit through his life, but basically there's a famine in the land. Once they get to Canaan, there's a famine, so then they flee to Egypt. And so he sees, he goes through some adversity with Abram. Like, they go through famine where there's no food, and so they have to flee to Egypt. He goes with Abram to Egypt, and they live there for a while. And I don't know if you guys heard Brian on Sunday when he was talking about how Abraham lied to King Abimelech about Sarah being his sister. And that was actually the passage that Pastor Brian talked about. That was actually the second time that Abraham did that. The first time that he did it was in Genesis chapter 13. He shows up It's actually at the end of chapter 12, but he tells the Pharaoh that Sarah is his sister, and God brings, bad stuff to Pharaoh's life. And so Pharaoh comes back to Abram and says, why did you tell me she was your sister and not your wife? And so he says, get out of here, take your stuff with you and go. You're bringing bad stuff to my house, and I don't want that. And so, when Pastor Brian was talking in Genesis chapter 20, that was actually the second time that Abraham did that with his wife. But anyway, so in chapter 13, it starts off in verse 1. It says, and Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. Okay, so he makes a lot of wealth in Egypt. And so by the time they leave Egypt and they come back to the promised land, Abram's got a lot of wealth built up, and Lot is with him, and Lot has some wealth as a result of Abraham following the Lord, and because Lot is, in his proximity, just like that Abrahamic covenant said, as God said, I'm going to bless those that bless you and curse them that curse you. And so Lot is living with Abraham, and he's presumably following the Lord, and God has blessed him. And so they come out of Egypt, and they both have a lot of wealth, and so they get to the promised land, and after a while, they've got so much cattle and so many servants and so much stuff going on that their servants are fighting each other and saying, like, you know, this is my land. No, this is our land. We were here first. And they're bickering over this land. And Abraham goes to Lot and he says, listen, God has given me all this land, right? There's no reason for us to be fighting over this small area. You got a lot of animals. I got a lot of animals. Let's spread out. You pick the land that you want. You tell me which way you want to go. And whatever you want, you take it, and I'll go the other way and take that land. And so I talked a little bit about that on Sunday. But in chapter 13, look at verse 8. It says, "And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. And Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly." So it says that Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. And then it tells us that Sodom, which you guys probably already know, but it says that Sodom was wicked, right? And the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. What verse is that in that it says that? What chapter is it in? I was going to say, what's interesting about that? Yeah, it's the number of rebellion, and it's talking about how wicked and evil the men of this city are. And but we see that of all the land that Lot could have chose, he chooses to set up his camp facing the most wicked city in the world that God soon is going to destroy because of its wickedness. Have you guys ever heard of a place called Sin City? Las Vegas, right? Las Vegas, Nevada is Sin City. So in our day and age, this would be like Sin City, like Las Vegas. And it's like, okay, I know that there's a lot of bad stuff that happens there, so I'm not actually going to go there, but I'm gonna set up my house where like that's off in the distance. Like I can see what the world has to offer. I can see what that city represents. Okay, that's where Lot chooses. Abraham gave him literally all of the promised land to choose from, and he puts his tent facing Sodom, that God says is exceedingly wicked. Now some of this is my interpretation of this, but I would imagine he's, based on being close enough to be pitched towards Sodom, maybe he could hear when there's, you know, some pagan god celebrations, okay? Maybe he can hear parties and stuff that are going on. Probably he can see travelers coming and going from this city, right? Just like, I mean, Vegas is a place that people go to, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's kind of the theme of the city of Las Vegas. You can do whatever you want here, and most of it's legal, and we're not going to tell anybody if you don't tell anybody. Okay? And so people go to Las Vegas to have a good time and to do all the, you know, debauchery type of things that we're not really supposed to do, but it's kind of an escape. It's not really reality. It's like a different place. We can go there, we can do what we want, and then we can come back to our normal life. And that's how people treat Las Vegas now. And my assumption is, I'm guessing this part, I don't know it exactly, but probably Lot had people traveling near his house, and he could see people going in to party, right, and then coming back and going home, right? I don't know if they go for the weekend or for different feasts for pagan gods and different celebrations, but he puts himself in a position where, like, the temptation that the world has is there, right? He's not actually in it. He's not actually participating in it. But the best of what the world has to offer was like in the background of his life, like where he lived. He was living in that. And for people who grow up in a Christian household, for you guys specifically, getting the way that Satan's going to get his hooks into you guys is typically not going to be just by confronting you straight on with opportunities to go into some like deep dark sin right off the bat. Like, that's generally not how Satan is going to attack somebody who grows up in a Christian household, who's raised to know right from wrong, whose parents have kind of an expectation that they're going to do the right thing, they're a good kid, those kinds of things, right? Generally speaking, you're not going to just be presented with an opportunity to, you know, steal a car one day, right? It's not going to come out of nowhere. Like, that's going to be the result of maybe you start spending a little bit of time with, you know, the rough crowd that you're not really supposed to be hanging out with. Maybe it's, you know, it's like little baby steps towards that, right? It's, oh, I'm just going to lie to my parents about this, or I'm going to sneak out and I'm going to go spend the afternoon with my parents or with my friends while my parents are at work, or I'm going to do just these little things, and slowly we kind of get like desensitized to, okay, well, what I used to think was like this really terrible, wicked, bad thing that I would never do if somebody asked me to do that. Well, now I've kind of like taken like little steps along the way to where now I'm like, I'm a little bit closer to it. And maybe if the right person came along and persuaded me to do that, maybe I could see myself doing something. Yeah, like, you know, you kind of start down this slippery slope. And so that's kind of where Lot is. He's setting himself up in a position where he still probably isn't doing anything wrong yet. Like, he's still, you know, he's not living in Sodom. He's not participating in the things that are going on there. But he's pointed himself in that direction where that could, you know, one of these days when these travelers keep going by, hey, what are you guys going to Sodom for today? Oh, there's this pagan god worship for this, you know, this weekend. You should come check it out. Oh, no, that's okay. I worship God. You know, I'm not going to do that. And then he sees them coming back. Man, that was awesome. You missed it. It was so great. You know, we did all this, and interesting. Maybe next time I'll go check it out. Right? Those are the kinds of ways that Satan works, specifically like in church kids or in kids who maybe wouldn't do, you know, what you would consider bad things. But all of us kind of have a threshold of where, okay, well, maybe I would do that. But I'm not going to go all the way and do all the stuff. But I'll do this and I'll do this. And slowly it turns into, you know, more than what we ever thought it would be. Look at Genesis chapter 14, I don't want to read this whole passage. Basically, the first, like, several verses of this chapter, there's a war that's breaking out. Okay, there's multiple kings that are going to go fight against multiple other kings, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah are involved in this fight. And so this battle goes on, and if you look down in verse 12, chapter 14, verse 12, it says, "And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed." What do you notice about that verse based on what I was just saying a minute ago? What does it say about Lot in that verse? Yeah. Now it says he's dwelling in Sodom. So in chapter 13, he pitches his tent towards Sodom. And just one chapter later, now he's living in Sodom. And he gets taken captive because his people are at war with another people. And he gets taken captive. And Abraham has... still is walking with the Lord. He's doing all the things. God's blessing him. And he's got these 318 trained men that are servants in his household. And he hears that Lot has been taken. And so Abraham says, all right, I need you 318 men. Come with me. And we're going to go get him back. And so they go and they put to flight these armies, these multiple armies. And they get Abram back, or they get Lot back. And they get all this stuff back. And they deliver him. And I want you guys to think about this. I want you to think about, try to put yourself in Lot's position. So he pitched his tent towards Sodom. What's happening in the world is like it's in his peripheral now. Like he knows some stuff. And now he has moved himself to where he's dwelling in Sodom. Likely he's starting to participate to some degree in some of the debauchery that's going on in Sodom. And that God says, like, hey, that's enough, Lot. Like, God has him captured and taken captive. Abram comes back into his life. I don't know how many years it has been since Abram was in his life, but when his uncle, who kind of semi-raised him, comes and rescues him, he brings in these 318 servants that Lot probably also knew most of them, right? Because they had been trained up in his house, in Abram's house. And they show up and they deliver him from captivity. That's an opportunity, right? He's been going down the wrong path for a while now. He's now living in this city of sin, and Abram delivers him. He had an opportunity right there. He could have gone back, right? He could have, hey, Abram, listen, my life has not been going the way that it's supposed to have been going, right? I've been getting involved in way too much stuff that I can't even tell you about because I'm ashamed of all the things I've been doing. And God has taken me into captivity. I've hit rock bottom. I could have been killed. My family could have been killed. You've saved me, right? You've delivered me. Can I just come back and stay with you again? Like, I'm not in the place that I need to be. I know better, right? You raised me to know the God of the universe, right? I know who that is. I know what it's like to walk with him, but I've drifted away from that. And, can I come back and like get on my feet again? But he doesn't do that. This is a good like wake up call opportunity. So if you find yourself in a position where, you know, you're doing things that maybe you shouldn't be doing, or you're not doing things you should be doing, and like you get an opportunity to have a wake up call, like take advantage of the wake up call and, humble yourself a little bit. It would have been a little difficult for him to go from, you know, the position that he was in to go back to Abram and say, listen, can you please take me in? That takes some humility, some dying to self, but that's what he really needed to do then. But he doesn't. The next few chapters is God dealing with Abraham directly, and some of the stuff we talked about on Sunday with the birth of Ishmael and, the promise of a son and all those things. But I want you guys to go to chapter 18, Genesis 18. So presumably several years have passed at this point, and we don't hear anything about Lot. And then in chapter 18, he's not mentioned by name, but Abraham gets a visit from these guys who turn out to be angels. And they come and they tell Abraham that his wife's going to have a baby. And what are you guys doing? Okay, pay attention. These angels are telling him, hey, your wife is going to have a baby, right? Sarah laughs. She's like, I'm way too old to have babies. I'm past that point. Abraham's like, man, I don't know. You know, we're both old. And so they have this conversation with him. But then also, right before they get ready to leave, look at verse 16. So after they get done telling him, hey, you're going to have a kid, and Sarah laughs and she denies it and all this stuff. It says, and the men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom. And Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. So they're getting ready to leave, and God has this, like, we get to see kind of inside the mind of God. God is actually asking out loud for us to read, should I tell Abraham what's about to happen? These angels are walking, and they're like walking towards Sodom. Abraham's walking with them, and God audibly, or at least for us, God's thinking out loud, and he says, should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do to Sodom and Gomorrah? I know Abraham has Lot, his family, that lives in Sodom. Should I tell him? And he says that, I know Abraham is surely going to become a great and mighty nation. And he says, you know, basically he says, I know Abraham, is going to train up his household. Well, should I clue him in on what I'm getting ready to do and how that might impact Lot? And in verse 20 it says, and the Lord said, because the cry, this is now God telling Abraham, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. So he's like, listen, I've been hearing some stuff about what's going on in Sodom, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, and I'm going to wipe it. If I go down there and I check it out, and what's happening is happening, which of course God knows what's happening, but if what I have heard is happening, I'm going to destroy this place. And Abraham stays behind and says, okay. And then there's the next, from 23 all the way to 33, this is the debate that Abraham has with God. And he starts off in verse 23, and he says, "And Abraham drew near and said, Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein?" So he says, God, listen, are you going to destroy righteous people? Just because there's a lot of bad stuff going on there, there's good people there too. Would you destroy the city if there's 50 righteous people there? And God's like, no, if there's 50 righteous people, I won't destroy the city. And Abraham's like, okay, that's good. What about if there's 45? What about 40? What about 30? Like he negotiates God all the way down to 10. Okay, he gets down to 10 and he's like, I'm going to stop at 10. Surely, between Lot and his wife and a couple of kids and a couple of spouses, maybe some grandkids, there's got to be at least 10 people in this city that are righteous. Maybe Lot's been telling other people, like, hey, you live in a wicked lifestyle. Why don't you come with me and serve the Lord? Maybe that's, Lot should have been doing that, right? Lot should have been teaching other people how not to live that way and how to follow the Lord. But so Abraham's like, okay, I think if there's 10 there, and God says, yeah, if there's 10 people there that are righteous, I won't destroy them. For your sake, Abraham, I won't destroy those people at all if there's 10 righteous people there. And so Abraham stops there and is like, okay, that's gotta be plenty. He's like, Lot knows better. I raised Lot right. He knows what he ought to be doing. Surely there's at least 10 righteous people. And if you know the rest of the story, there's not at least 10 righteous people there. So what we find out is what happens all the time in these kind of situations is rather than Lot turning people's attention to the Lord, these people turned Lot's heart away from God and started getting involved in the sin that was going on there, right? It's the same thing that happened with Solomon. You guys know the story of Solomon, right? He was the wisest man that ever lived. He walked with the Lord. But at the end of his life, he's got 700 wives and 300 concubines, or the other way around, I can't remember. There's 1,000 of them, though. And he's going after all these different princesses from all these different places, and they all have their own God, and it says that those women turned Solomon's heart away from the Lord to serve their gods, right? He wanted to please this wife, and he's like, honey, what's your favorite god again? Oh, yeah, Dagon. Okay, build a temple to Dagon for this wife. All right, babe, what was your favorite? Okay, this person. And he starts building all these temples and all these places of worship for all these other gods, and by the time he's done with it, he has so many gods now, and his heart is so not focused on the Lord, even though he's the wisest man who ever lived, the richest man that ever lived, all those things. He was set up for victory, but the world turned his heart away from God. And more often than not, that's what's going to happen. If we put ourselves in a situation where we're surrounded by people who are not walking with the Lord, it's more often than not, they're going to turn us away from God rather than us going into this situation and turning all of them to follow the Lord. It's very difficult when what you're surrounded by is not glorifying the Lord. That's why this kind of a class or this church and the events that we do and why we want you guys to bring friends, because when there's 20 people that are all kind of headed in the same direction, when you bring one other person in, maybe that's lost, that has no clue what church is about, they see, okay, my normal friends are talking in this way and they're doing these kinds of things and they're thinking about this kind of stuff that they shouldn't be thinking about and they're looking at stuff on their phone that they shouldn't be looking at. But when I come to your church, they're still kids. Like, you know, you guys aren't perfect. None of us is perfect, but there's something different that's going on, right? People are not like, talking trash to each other as much. People are not cussing like, you know, all my other friends are. They're not talking about those kinds of things that my friend group talks about. And there's something different that's going on. And so we don't want to, like, send one of you to a group of 20 lost people that are going to pull you away from church and pull you away from what God's doing. But when there's, you know, when you're surrounded by a group of people that's like-minded that are all trying to follow the Lord and we're talking about God and we're talking about ways that we can serve Him with our life and all those kinds of things, and someone else comes in, that's where we have an opportunity to win that person. That's where we have an opportunity for that person to hear it differently than they would hear it if they're surrounded by their group of friends. And so Lot's kind of, Lot has turned from having his tent facing Sodom to living in Sodom. So when we see him in chapter 19, I didn't write down what verse it was. Let me see. Yeah, oh, it's verse 1. Chapter 19, verse 1. It says, "And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground." And we see now that Lot is, it says that he sat in the gate of Sodom. And what that means is he was like in a position of leadership now in Sodom. So he went from seeing it and being around it to living in it to now he's leading part of it, right? He is involved in the leadership of Sodom and is likely involved in a lot of what's going on. And if you read the rest of that chapter, there's some sexual wickedness that's happening. These men of the city, they see these angels come in and they're banging on Lot's door. They're like, "Send those men out here. We want to sleep with those men." Like, these are men in the city of Sodom that are banging his door down as a mob trying to get in to sleep with these two angels. And Lot is like, "Please, no. I'll give you my daughters. I'll give you my two daughters who are virgins, and you guys can do whatever you want with them, but please don't mess with these guys." Okay, this is the kind of sexual, like, messed up, wicked stuff that's happening in Sodom. Okay, if you read the rest of that chapter, that's what's happening in that chapter. And so these angels, they blind the people, and they say, "Lot, get your stuff, we're getting out right now. There's not even 10 righteous people here. There's really zero righteous people here. Lot, you should have been, you were one that Abraham definitely thought would have been righteous, but you're leading the charge of wickedness here. You're trying to send your own daughters out to this mob of men. You're all the way in it now. Like Lot is one of them." Okay? And so the angels are like, "Get your stuff, we're getting out. Grab your sons or your sons-in-law. Grab your wife, like, we're getting out of here right now." And so he tries to get them out. His sons-in-law laugh at him. They're like, "What are you talking about, Lot? This is a joke." Because he's trying to tell them, like, "Hey, there's angels here and God's going to destroy this place." And they just think he's joking because they can't even take him seriously. Like, he's lost credibility with his own family to the point that they won't even flee a city that's getting ready to be destroyed, even though he's telling them it's about to be destroyed, because he's gone so far down this slippery slope. He's like at the bottom now. And so he ends up, him and his wife and his two daughters, they get out. I told you guys on Sunday, as they're walking away from Sodom, the angels say, "Do not look back, right? Don't worry about what's in the past. At first you were 1 foot in the world and 1 foot following the Lord, and now you're like both feet and your whole body all the way in on what the world has to offer. Do not look back at that. You're gonna have to stop cold turkey. All that's gonna be destroyed, and you're gonna have a chance to start over because Abraham, you know, I'm blessing you because of Abraham, because of your proximity and because of your family to him. Otherwise, right, like Lot did not deserve any grace in this situation. He was fully complicit in what was going on. But we know his wife turned around. She missed what was going on back home. She wanted to be, she longed for what was, and she turned into a pillar of salt. And some other really messed up stuff happens with his daughters. And if you want to read that, you can. It's in the Bible, but I'm not going to talk about it right now. But what I want you guys to get from this is it took years. I don't know how many years, but it took years. Because in between all this, Ishmael is born. 13 years of silence passes. So, I mean, we're talking like probably a couple of decades of time period has passed from the time that Lot's dad and grandfather die, and he gets raised up, and then they split, and all this stuff happened over decades of time. And so it's not like one day Lot wakes up and all of a sudden he's a leader in Sodom and he's trying to give his virgin daughters to a mob of men in the middle of the night. That didn't happen like from one day to the next, right? It happened over a period of time. It was baby step after baby step, allowing himself a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more of what the world had to offer. And before too long, he looks up and he's losing his family. His sons-in-laws get destroyed. His daughters' lives end up getting destroyed. His wife turns into a pillar of salt. All that's left is him and his daughters and the sexual immorality that they were living in. And all of this stuff happened because He turned his attention from the things that he was raised and trained up to do from his youth. He turned away from those things. But I want you to fast forward all the way to 2 Peter. This is the last time that Lot's name shows up, I'm pretty sure. 2 Peter chapter 2. And this is the grace of God, guys. All the things that happened in Lot's life, there's really not much redeeming qualities about Lot. Like when you hear the story that I just told you, and you read more. I mean, this is still not even everything that we could be talking about with Lot. But when you hear the story of Lot and you see how his life could have been, look at what happened with Abraham. If Lot would have stayed with Abraham, Abraham had the blessing of God on everything he did. Like everything he did, just came out right. I mean, Abraham, for the most part, lived his life following the Lord. He did some things that he shouldn't have done, but for the most part, Abraham was following the Lord almost all the days of his life. And if Lot would have stayed with him, imagine where his life could have been. Imagine he would be listed maybe in Hebrews chapter 11 in the Hall of Fame of Faith where Abraham is listed. Maybe Lot could have been listed right alongside him. But he didn't. But still, God had grace on this guy. And when you get to 2 Peter chapter 2, it says, let's start in verse 5. And spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that should live ungodly, and delivered who?
Just
Lot. What was righteous and just about Lot? Not a lot. Okay? And delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. But chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed, they are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. And there's a lot more that we could read there, but we're running out of time. But it says that God delivered just Lot. He was not just at all. And it says in verse 8 that he was a righteous man dwelling among them, and he was seeing and he was hearing, and it vexed him day by day, the stuff that was going on. And I mean, I'm sure that's true at the beginning, when he first moves into town, and he's like, you guys are doing what with who? Like, what's happening around here? Like, this is crazy, right? But the more he lived in it, and the more time he spent with it, the more it became normal. It desensitized him to all the things that were going on, and to where it became just, this is normal. Like, this is just how we live, right? We live in a perverse society. That's us today, and that was Lot then. But God's got this grace on him and says, you know, Lot was, he was a good guy. To start with, he was really a good guy. And just day by day, living in this filth factory of Sodom and Gomorrah, all of this stuff eventually just kind of vexed him daily to the point that, their unlawful deeds kind of rubbed off on him. But in verse 9, the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. Like, even in the state that Lot was in, God didn't turn his back on him, right? He destroyed his city, but he spared him because of Abraham. And, no matter where we find ourselves, like, God desires to restore us, right? God desires to deliver us from whatever situation we find ourselves in. God forbid any of us find ourselves in a position as bad as Lot, but it's really easy to look and say, that guy's really bad. And Lot could have looked at those guys from the beginning and said, those guys are really bad. Hey guys, listen.
He's not going to sit by each other.
He's on me, bro.
All right, hey, we're almost done. Just hang in there for a minute. Lot, when he first started, Lot could have looked at those guys in Sodom and said, man, those guys are messed up. But by the end of the story, he is just as messed up as them, leading it, in fact. And so be careful, like, when we look at other people and say, man, those people are really messed up, right? Those people do not have any idea what God is about. They're not nearly as good as I am, right? I'm very guilty of that. I grew up in church. I've spent pretty much my whole life in church. And it's really easy to be judgmental of people who didn't grow up in church, or who we can look at and say, that person is not living their life like I am. They're not nearly living it as good as I am. Maybe we wouldn't say that out loud, but we definitely think it. But I want to remind you guys that Satan does not come after us, like, to our face, bold, and just say, hey, I want you to try this. Right? He comes at us subtly, right? Just like he did with Eve. He comes and he's like, hey, man, I don't know what you think about this, but I'm going to put this girl in your life, or this guy in your life, and you're going to be friends, you know, maybe, and then they're going to, like, try to get you to do this thing or that thing. Or I'm going to put you around these other people. I'm going to get you in a situation where, okay, this isn't so bad that you would definitely, like, turn your face away from it, and I'm not going to do this. I'll kind of subtly ease you into it, and then once you get the hook in, then you reel it in, you know, like when you're fishing. And so that's how Satan works, especially with Christians, is if he can get, like, lead you away a little bit, get you, like, slightly separated from the church, slightly separated from your parents, get you in a position where, you know, maybe he can get you to compromise a little bit, and it becomes a super slippery slope. But if you find yourself in that position, like, God is still just. God still wants to deliver. Even in when we read about Lot in the New Testament, we find out Lot is just, and his surroundings vexed him, and God still had grace and said, hey, you know what? Lot messed up, but I still love him, right? And I just think it's a cool redemption story and a cool grace story of Lot, but it's also kind of a cautionary tale. So we're over by 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Let me pray, and then we'll be done.